check your cell phone?
What?
What, are you deaf? Is that your cell phone?
No, it's my cell phone.
The play's gonna start. Turn it off. Do you know how annoying it is when that rings during the show?
When what rings?
You need a hearing aid.
I got a hearing aid.
Really? What kind is it?
5 after 8.
Enjoy the show. But please, turn your phone off. Now.
What?
A Russian, a Frenchman, and a Jew are lost in the desert. The Russian says, Ah, I'm so tired and thirsty. I must have the vodka. And the Frenchman says, Mon Dieu, I'm so tired and thirsty. I must have the wine. And the Jew says, Oi, I'm so tired and thirsty. I must have diabetes. I'm old and getting older every minute. Life is hard. And I am living proof. I could stand here singing songs of all my troubles. But check your ticket. This is not Fiddler on the Roof. I'm here because I've got a little secret. A remedy for all that makes you frown. When life is bad and kicks you in the kishkas. Show the world that you're not gonna take it lying down. Tell a little joke, smile a little smile. Tell your worldly troubles to go fuck off for a while. Look around and soon you'll notice, holy smokes, there's all these old Jews telling jokes.
Why don't Jewish mothers drink? They don't want to dull the pain.
My wife likes to talk to me during sex. She calls me up and says, Nathan, I'm having sex.
You're born and lie there pooping in your diaper.
You grow up going bald and getting fat.
You live until your memory falls to pieces.
You start to wheeze, your bowels seize. What's the deal with that?
Your babies all get sick and cry for hours.
Markets tank and governments go bust.
The clock is ticking till you're on your deathbed. And someone's looking down upon us saying, Just sing a little song, watch a little sketch.
You'll feel better if you're
yelling
than you will if you forget.
Look at him, he's killing time before he croaks. So let that old Jew tell some jokes.
An old Jewish man walks into a restaurant, goes up to the maitre d' and says, Pardon me, how do you prepare your chicken? Maitre d' says, we tell them right up front, they ain't gonna make it.
Young Jews are funny too.
We're also less expensive for Royal Joint Review.
We're joining the cast, thought we should explain.
Don't worry, we're both method, so we feel your pain. So if you've suffered till the age of 60,
or even if you're 40, like I am,
from the time that you were born till life is over,
there are moments when it's kosher for a Jew to be a ham. So let us make you laugh. Don't worry, we won't dance.
If you've got trouble, don't give them a second glance.
The perfect kind of medicine is right here, folks. It's old Jews.
Show me the baby. We'll have a little coffee. We'll have a little nausea. I'm not thirsty. I'm not hungry. Show me the baby. When the baby cries, I'll show you the baby. When the baby cries, why do I have to wait till the baby cries? I forgot where I put him, okay?
The Saperstein's are so proud of their son. He is just the cutest little boy in town. Everybody loves him. There's just one problem. He doesn't speak. Not a word. So for his fifth birthday, the neighbor, Mrs. Epstein, comes over.
Here, Bubula, some delicious kreplach I made just for you.
Yeah, but Tui, this kreplach is horrible.
Bubula, we didn't think you could speak. It's been 5 years. Why did you wait until now?
Up until now, everything's been okay.
Three Jewish mothers are sitting on a bench.
Oy vey.
Oy gewalt.
Oy vey's mir.
I thought we weren't going to talk about the children.
Three Jewish mothers are sitting on a bench, minding their own business. Think about it.
Mrs. Shapinsky takes her 8-year-old grandson to the beach. A giant wave comes crashing in and sweeps the little boy out to sea. She looks up to the heavens. God, she said, please. He's my only grandson, and I love him more than life itself. Please, please bring him back to me. She looks up. Suddenly the waters part, and a giant ray of light shines down from the sky, and she sees a golden dolphin heading for the shore with little Sammy on his back. The dolphin gently places little Sammy on the beach and then swims away towards a beautiful rainbow. Mrs. Shapinsky looks down at little Sammy and around the beach and up to God. He had a hat!
Two Jewish kids wander into a tough-looking neighborhood, and two scary-looking Gentiles approach. One of the Jews says,
run! There are two of them, and we're alone!
All right, children, settle down. Now, who is the greatest man who ever lived?
George Washington.
I'm sorry, Max, that's not the answer I was looking for.
Abraham Lincoln?
That's not it either, Howard. Anyone else?
Jesus Christ!
Congratulations, Stuart. That's exactly the answer I was looking for.
Aww.
And just for that, you get a lollipop.
Aww. Stewie, how could you say Jesus was the greatest man who ever lived?
Look, you know it's Moses and I know it's Moses, but business is business.
So, Bubula, back from the first day, Bubula, I'm so proud and smiling. Tell me what you learned, Bubula.
I learned my name is Max.
A beggar came up to my mother on the street and said, I haven't eaten in 3 days. And my mother said, force yourself.
It's Danny Rubenstein's bar mitzvah, and his father takes him down to Maxwell Street to buy his bar mitzvah suit.
Hey, look, only $90. Try on the jacket. Perfect!
No, Dad, this is awful. The jacket's too small.
No, this is not a problem. Just do this.
But Dad, when I do that, the other arm doesn't fit.
No, this is not a problem. Just do this.
But Dad, look at the pants. It's way too long in the crotch.
This is not a problem. Just do this. Oh, so nice. Your mother be so proud.
Look, Cheryl, that poor crippled boy. It's tragic.
But look how nice the suit fits.
Into his teenage son's room and says, son, you're going to have to stop masturbating or you'll go blind. And the son says, Dad, I'm over here.
Dr. Dropkin is a world-famous cardiologist. He has degrees from Princeton, Harvard, and Yale, and has practiced as a research physician at the highest level in his field. He is so successful that he's being honored in his hometown at a fancy black tie event. Every important person in town is there. Dr. Dropkin's about to give his speech, which he's been working on for months, when his notes slide off the lectern and fall to the floor. He bends over to pick them up, his tuchus is near the microphone, and suddenly he lets loose the loudest fart in the history of farts. Dropkin is so humiliated, he just runs the nearest exit and gets out of there as fast as he can. He never sees anyone from the town, he never talks to anyone from the town, and he never goes back there again. 30 years pass. He's long retired. He starts to get sentimental. He doesn't know how much longer he's going to be around. He wants to go back to his birthplace, but he's still scarred from that one horrible moment. So he goes in the middle of the night under the cover of darkness wearing a disguise and checks into the local Hyatt using the pseudonym Dr. Adler.
Good evening, Dr. Adler. Welcome. Have you stayed in our town before?
Well, as a matter of fact, young man, I grew up here, but I left a long time ago, and I haven't been back since.
Well, may I ask why, sir? I mean, it's such a nice, friendly town.
Well, a number of years ago, a very embarrassing thing happened to me, and I just didn't feel as if I could come back and face the people here.
Doctor, if I can give you any advice from my experience in my very young life, it's that things that I found embarrassing or humiliating, I later learned that no one even remembered that they'd happened. No one even noticed. I'm sure the same is true with whatever you found so embarrassing. Was it a long time ago?
Well, yes, it was a very long time ago.
I am sure people have forgotten.
You really think so?
Yeah, let me ask you this. Was it before or after the Dropkin fart?
And her unmarried daughter, Yetta.
Yetta!
Are sitting by the pool of the Eden Rock Hotel in Miami Beach. A very handsome man comes over, tips the pool boy with $100 bill. He removes his robe. His physique is magnifique.
I haven't seen you before. Are you new around here?
I haven't been here in a long time. The last time was 18 years ago.
Why so long?
Well, to tell the truth, I've been in jail.
Oh my! What happened?
I killed my wife.
So you're not married!
I've got a doctor's appointment on Monday. I'm not sick or anything. I just lost some weight and I want someone to see me naked.
Sheldon goes to a psychiatrist. Doc, he says, I gotta talk to someone. See, I work in a pickle factory, and for the past 3 months, I've had this overwhelming desire to put my schlong in the pickle slicer. The doctor is shocked but says he can help. Tell Sheldon to come see him 3 times a week. They'll get right to work on the problem. So a few weeks later, Sheldon comes in and says he couldn't take it any longer. That morning, he finally did it. He put his schlong right in the pickle slicer. And the doctor says, oh, my God, man, what happened? Sheldon says, I got fired. He said, no, what happened with the pickle slicer? He says, she got fired, too.
Newberg is a total schlemiel, and he's got his first big date, so he goes to the drugstore to get some condoms, and the clerk says that'll be $5.98 plus tax, and Newberg says, tax? They don't stay up by themselves?
I told my mom I was finally getting married, and she was thrilled, and she said she wanted to meet my fiancé, so I said, Mom, I'm going to play a little game with you. I'm going to bring over 3 women. You have to guess which one is going to be my wife. She said, fine. So the next day, I brought in 3 beautiful women. My mom talks to each of them for 15 seconds. She turns to me. She says, it's the redhead in the middle. I said, Mom, that's amazing. How did you do that? She says, that's the one I don't like.
Tattooed on his penis. I told him, stop trying to put words in my mouth.
A woman goes into the store to buy 4D batteries.
Come this way.
If I could come this way, I wouldn't need the batteries.
Hires a guide to take him skydiving. So after his big adventure, his friend says,
so,
How'd it go?
Oh my God, it was terrifying. I panicked. It was my turn to jump, but I couldn't do it. So two more guys went, then it's my turn again. I still couldn't do it. So three more guys went. I couldn't jump. I mean, I am standing there at the door, and my guide is this huge man, 6'4", 250 pounds, and he says, "That's it. I've had it. Either you jump, or I'm gonna take my giant dick and stick it in your ass."
So, did you jump?
A little, at first.
Max, of course I love you. I'm just nervous about the next step.
Me too. I want everything to be perfect.
My girlfriend Naomi tells me that the secret to great sex is for the man to eat lots of rye bread.
Really? Rye bread?
She swears it's true.
So Max goes into his local deli and orders 5 loaves of rye. The guy behind the counter says,
5 loaves of rye bread for just yourself? By the time you get to the 3rd loaf, it'll be hard.
Everybody knows the secret but me.
Bronstein and his girlfriend are having dinner, and he says to her, the guys are all talking about blowjobs. And she says, "Blowjob? What's that?" He does his best to tell her, but she says, "Well, I don't know how to do that." So he looks around the kitchen. He sees a ketchup bottle. He hands it to her and says, "Here, maybe you can practice on this." A few days later, he comes over to her place. She's already in her nightgown. "I've been practicing," she says. She takes him up to her bedroom, drops her nightgown to the floor. He lies down on the bed. She unzips his pants, takes his penis, and goes...
Leibowitz is shipwrecked on a desert island, and all he has with him is a sheep.
Bah!
And a dog.
Bow, bow.
Now, the sheep he has been raising for food. Yeah, but when she's fully grown, he decides he can't kill her. In fact, he's so lonely, and I mean, she is so attractive. He has fallen in love with the sheep. He takes her for long strolls. He feeds her. He brings her flowers. And then one day he decides that it's time to consummate the relationship. So he splashes a little coconut oil on his face. He checks his reflection in the ocean, and he walks up to the sheep. But before anything can happen, the dog rushes in and bites him on the ankle. So he waits for a couple of days, and he decides he can't take it any longer. Once again, he walks up to the sheep. He's about ready to mount her when once again the dog rushes in and bites him on the ankle. This goes on for weeks. Leibowitz is getting desperate. He writes love sonnets in the sand.
Bah, bah.
He sings to the sheep at night.
Bah, bah.
But he can't get anywhere near her. Then one day, as he's limping down the beach, he spies a human figure in the distance. As he gets closer, Leibowitz realizes not only is it a woman, it's a very beautiful woman. Leibowitz helps her to her feet, feeds her, gives her some hot tea, and finally she says,
thank you so much. You saved my life. I'll do anything for you.
Anything?
Anything.
Great. Go walk the dog.
Riccio, Walsh, and Saperstein all grew up together, but they've been rivals since they've been about 8. They competed over grades, girls, jobs. They were so competitive that when they went into business, they each opened up a shoe store right next door to one another on the exact same day. Now, Riccio, on the left, he put up a sign that says, "Half Price Sale." And Walsh, on the right, he put up a sign that says, "Huge Selection." And Saperstein, in the middle, he put up a sign that says...
Three Texans are sitting on a plane.
How you doing? My name's Roger. I own 250,000 acres, 1,000 head of cattle, and they call my place the Jolly Roger.
Well, hey there. My name's John. I own 350,000 acres, 5,000 head of cattle, and they call my place Big John's.
My name is Irving, and I only own 2 acres.
2 acres? What do you raise?
I don't raise nothing.
Well, then what do you call it?
Times Square.
After 30 years in the nail business, Levinson decides to retire, leaving things to his sons and he moves to Florida.
Boys, boys, boys. We've been selling now successfully for 3 decades, 11 since name is Gold. Everything's gonna be fine. Just don't do anything stupid.
After a couple of months in the sun, he flies back from Florida and passes a giant billboard outside of O'Hare. He goes straight to the office.
I can't believe you're my own flesh and blood. It's the stupidest move in the history of business. This takes stupidity to such a new level of stupid. You're not even smart enough to understand how stupid it is.
We were just doing some marketing.
Marketing?
We were just trying to be modern.
Modern? You schmucks! You alienated 90% of our customers with just one billboard. All right, I'm going back to Florida. By the time I return, I want you to prove to me that you're not as stupid as I think you are.
After a couple of months, he flies back to O'Hare, takes a cab into the city, and passes that giant billboard.
Of the television. Both my parents worked, my older brother had an actual life, so my babysitters were the Three Stooges, Soupy Sales, and Groucho Marx. Now, there were still plenty of places around America where Jews couldn't buy apartments or houses, but now, thanks to TV, people in Atlanta and Wyoming and Arkansas who'd never even met a Jew had them in their living rooms for hours on end. And one night, my father brought home a record album. It was Alan Sherman. Now, instead of going our separate ways after dinner, my brother out on dates, my father upstairs to work, my mom to do the finances, me to the bathroom with pictures of Aunt Margaret. We went to the living room and listened to comedy. Woody Allen, Mort Saul, Shelley Berman, 2,000-year-old man. And it wasn't just us, it was everybody. You'd hear total strangers in a supermarket singing, "Hello, Mother, hello, Father." It created this incredible sense of togetherness, as if the whole world was going to turn out all right, because we were all laughing at the same thing at the same time. It didn't last, of course. My brother and I went our separate ways. We didn't stay close. My parents got divorced. But I got a 9-year-old grandson now. This kid doesn't have 6 friends listening to comedy in the living room. He's got 8,000 Facebook friends. Here and in India and Outer Mongolia, sharing YouTube videos of Japanese stand-up comics and Zach Galifianakis on Funny or Die. See, it's hard to stop funny from spreading like wildfire. So who knows? Maybe the world will turn out all right after all. Good night.
Bank robbery, one of the robbers' masks falls off, and so he immediately grabs it, puts it back on, and turns to a guy and says, "Hey, when my mask fell off, did you see my face?" And the guy says, "Yes, I have to say that I did." So the robber pulls out his gun and shoots the guy. And then he turns to a woman and says, "Hey, when my mask fell off, did you see my face?" And the woman says, "No, but my husband did."
Kaplan is driving down the Edens Expressway when a cop pulls him over. "Sir, do you realize your wife fell out of the car a mile back?" "I thank God," Kaplan said. "I thought I was going deaf."
A man goes to see his rabbi. He says, "Rabbi, I think my wife is poisoning me. I don't know what to do." And the rabbi says, "Well, give me a chance to talk to her, and I'll get back to you." So the next day, the rabbi calls the man up. He says, "Well, I had a long, long talk with your wife, 3 hours at least." The man says, "Yeah, yeah. So what's your advice?" "Take the poison."
Kaminsky is a kleptomaniac, and he's been caught stealing from the local supermarket and has to go to court. The judge says,
Mr. Kaminsky, that is not acceptable behavior.
What did you steal?
Just one can of peaches, Your Honor.
How many peaches were in that can?
Six.
Mr. Kaminsky, you are going to jail for 6 nights. 1 night for each peach.
Oh, Your Honor, please, Your Honor. No, no, no. Please hear me out, Your Honor. Oh, please hear me out.
All right, Mrs. Kaminsky, what would you like to say on your husband's behalf?
He also stole a can of peas.
Levinsky goes to his rabbi for counseling. He says, Rabbi, I did a horrible thing at dinner last night. I made a terrible Freudian slip.
Tell me what you meant to say.
I meant to say, darling, please pass me the butter.
Tell me what you said.
You fucking bitch, you ruined my life!
Hello, Mr. Saperstein. I'm Dr. Stevens. You were in a terrible accident. Your penis was chopped off in the wreck.
Oh.
And we weren't able to find it.
Ah.
But don't worry, I'm sure you'll be fine. I talked to Dr. Firestone, the head of the hospital. We can build you a new penis that'll work even better than your old one.
Oh.
But I have to tell you, it doesn't come cheap. It's $1,000 per inch. But I took the liberty of talking to your insurance company. You're getting an excellent settlement, so the cost shouldn't be a problem.
Oh.
You just have to decide how many inches you want. And it's very important that you discuss it with Mrs. Saperstein. Well, let's face it, if you had 5 inches before and now you go for 9, it could be uncomfortable for her. But if you had 9 inches and now you only want to invest in 5, it could be a serious disappointment.
I understand. Thank you, doctor. I'll talk with her.
So the next day the doctor comes back and asks, so, have you spoken with Mrs. Saperstein?
Yes, I have.
And did she help with the decision?
Yes, she did.
So what are you going to get?
Granite countertops.
The Shema prayer is said, half the congregants stand up and half remain seated.
What are you standing on?
Stand up, you lazy butt! What? Do you hate God?
It quickly got out of hand.
You butt!
You got a face like a foot. May your arteries be as hard as your head.
And the rabbi doesn't know what to do. Sit or stand? He desperately hopes someone has a suggestion.
Rabbi, I have a suggestion. One of the original founders of the temple, he's 98 years old and wonderfully wise. He'll know what the temple tradition is.
So, the rabbi goes to a nursing home to visit one of the founders of the temple.
This must be very important, young man. I have another visitor who could count. It's been so long. How may I help you?
Rabbi, there is much anger at the temple. We have to learn about the past. So please tell me, is it the tradition for the congregants to stand during the Shema?
No, that is not a tradition.
At last, a solution. Then the tradition must be for the congregants to sit during the Shema.
No, that is not a tradition.
Rabbi, I don't understand. Right now it's terrible. One half stands, one half sits. All they do is yell at each other about what to
That's
do.
That's the tradition.
A young woman has just learned that her 98-year-old grandfather has died. So she goes to pay her grandmother a visit, and they're talking. And she says, Grandma, how did it happen? And Grandma says, well, it was Sunday morning, and we were making love. Grandma. Two people almost 100 years old having sex? Didn't you know that could be very dangerous? And Grandma says, no, we worked it out. We always did what was right for us. We always did it on Sunday morning in time with the church bells. Ding, dong, ding, dong. In with the ding, out with the dong. Oh, my. Your grandfather would still be alive if it wasn't for that good humor truck.
Rabbi Goldstein, who never married, has been with the congregation for 25 years. Everybody loves him. He's presided over hundreds of bar mitzvahs and weddings and funerals. So to mark his anniversary with the shul, the board of directors decides to treat him to a vacation. He's never been outside New Jersey. They decide to send him to Hawaii. He lands in Honolulu. We can't believe how beautiful it is. He's driven to a 5-star hotel. He's brought up to his magnificent suite. There's fruit, flowers, candy, an ocean view. And when he walks into his bedroom, there's a gorgeous young woman completely naked, spread out on his bed. He looks at her, he says, I don't believe this. He walks over the telephone, calls the president of the shul. How dare you do a thing like this to me? I am a rabbi, a man of the cloth. This is an abomination. I will never, ever speak to you again. And he slams down the phone. He turns around, he sees that the young woman has grabbed all her clothes and is hurriedly getting dressed. Wait a minute, he says. I'm not mad at you.
This is Debbie for CNN in Jerusalem. I'm in front of the famous Wailing Wall, observing a very old man who I've been told has been praying at this holiest of sites twice a day, every day, for over 50 years. Pardon me, sir, I'm Debbie. For CNN. Can you tell us your name, please?
Modest Feinberg.
And how long have you been coming to the Wailing Wall and praying?
60 years, 4 months, 11 hours, 18 minutes.
60 years.
4 months, 11 hours, 19 minutes.
You must be one of the most devout men on the planet. That's amazing. And what do you pray for?
I pray for worldwide peace between our Christians, Muslims, and Jews. I pray for the wars and all the hatred everywhere to stop immediately. I pray for the children to grow up safely as responsible adults and to love their fellow men. I pray for the politicians to tell the truth and to put the interests of the people ahead of their own interests.
And how do you feel after doing this for over 60 years?
Like I'm talking to a fucking wall. Her stylist, whom she's known forever, says.
So, any travel coming up for you and Max?
Yes, we're going to Rome next month.
Rome? Oh, you gotta be kidding me. Have you been there recently? Oh, the prices are insane. The traffic is worse than ever. The whole place is overrun with tourists. Ugh. How you getting there?
Alitalia.
Alitalia, the worst. The last time I flew Alitalia, we were stuck on the runway for 3 hours before they took off. They ran out of food. The flight attendants treated us like we were dirt. It was like we were flying steerage. Where you staying?
The Hassler.
Oh, Rome's finest hotel, right? Yeah, maybe 30 years ago. The walls haven't been washed since the 80s. The concierge is like an undertaker, and the breakfast costs $50. And I suppose you're going to try and see the Pope?
Well, we thought we would.
Yeah, a nightmare. You're going to St. Peter's Square. There are thousands of people, half of them gropers, the other half pickpockets. Then you look way off in the distance. A tiny man in white pajamas waving in a balcony. The Pope? Yeah, the Pope, my foot. He's an actor.
So, Sadie and Max go to Rome, and when they come back, she goes in to get her hair done.
So, how was your trip? Was I right, or was I right?
Well, it was wonderful. Alitalia bumped us up to first class, and we actually arrived an hour early. Huh. A Mercedes was waiting to take us to the hotel. Huh. We had a beautiful room, and the beds were strewn with fresh rose petals, spelling out Sadie and Max.
Huh. And I suppose you went to try and see the Pope?
And not only did we see him, we actually spoke with him.
You are kidding me. How did that happen?
Well, there we were in St. Peter's Square, and the Popemobile was riding slowly through the crowd and stopped directly in front of us. The Pope, the holiest man in the world, got out and gestured for me to come over to him. And then he leaned over and whispered to me.
Oh, my God. What did he say?
Who fucked up your hair?
Sails in shreds. As the current seems to be taking the boat back out to sea, a man jumps overboard. He swims toward shore. Cohen swims out to help and brings him back in.
For this, I can't thank you enough. I'm so lucky you were here.
You're lucky. I've been alone on this island for 7 years. No one to talk to, no companionship. I'm Cohen.
Dudley, for so long you've been here, so tell me, what must life be like in such a place?
Well, it's a little lonely, but not so bad. I wake up every morning, I pick a coconut or a pawpaw, have it for breakfast. Then on the beach, I walk into lunch. If I'm lucky, catch a fish and cook it. Then in the afternoon, I go hiking in the hills, check the tracks, maybe catch a rabbit. This goes on all week, and then on Friday, I go to temple.
Temple? On this island, you got a temple?
Well, not one, but two.
One man, one island, two temples. How could this be?
Well, this one I go to every Friday night, and this one I wouldn't set foot in it.
I'm spending Hanukkah in Santa Monica, wearing sandals, lighting candles by the sea.
I spent Shavuos in the St. Louis. Charming spot, but clearly not a spot for me.
Those eastern winters, I can't endure them. So every year I pack my gear and come out here to Purim.
Rosh Hashanah, I spend in Arizona.
And Yom Kippur, way down in Mississippi. But in December, there's just one place for me. I'm in the California flora. I'll be lighting my menorah.
Like a baby in his cradle, I'll be playing with my cradle.
Spending Hanukkah in Santa Monica by the sea. Everybody, follow the mountain dreidel.
Charming spot, really not the spot for me. Those eastern winters, I can't endure them. So every year I pack my gear and come out here.
Ladies only!
California, Florida, I'll be lighting my menorah like a
to be funny. When I was a very little girl, I used to make my mother laugh, and I'd say, not funny. Oh, that's all I ever wanted to be, not funny. And then when I was about five, my mother said to me, funny, not funny, it doesn't matter. Just promise me you'll never be boring. Well, I didn't know what the word meant, so I said, Ma, what's boring? And she said, your father. I never wanted to be funny. I wanted to be a businesswoman. And so right out of school, I got a job at a big Madison Avenue ad agency, just like Mad Men. And they made me their first female copywriter. And then one great day, we landed a huge account, Tampax. Now, our biggest competitor was Modest, which made sanitary napkins. And they had a very decorous slogan, which everybody in America already knew, Modest Because. So we all gathered in the executive conference room, 15 men and me, and the creative director looked ominously around the room and said, well, gentlemen, how are we going to go head to head with a slogan such as Modest Because? I don't know. It just kind of fell out of my mouth, and I said, well, how about Tampax insofar as? Some of the men laughed, and then they fired me. Later that day, after cleaning out my desk, I was headed toward the elevator, and one of the young account executives that had been at the meeting came over and said, Bunny, you never could have been a success here. Well, I was crushed. And then he lowered his voice and said, so, let's start our own agency. The first big account I landed, Tampax. And the company that fired me, we bought them because. Zipkin and Weinstein are walking past a Catholic church with a big sign that says, convert to Catholicism, get $50. Weinstein says, I'm going to do it. So he strides into the church, and 20 minutes later, he comes out with his head bowed. And Zipkin says, well, did you get the $50? Weinstein looks up at him and says, is that all you people think about?
Nussbaum is retiring after 40 years in the schmata business. His friend Moskowitz says to him, oh, what are you going to do after you retire?
I'm going to join the New York Athletic Club.
Are you Meshuggah? They're never going to let a Jew in the New York Athletic Club.
I have my ways.
So, the day after he retires, he puts on a Turnbull and Astor shirt, blue blazer with the gold buttons, a red silk tie, and he heads on down to the NYAC. He's ushered into a sumptuous room, and a very elegant man steps in to interview him. Your name, sir?
No, it's Whitney Throckmorton III.
And your line of work?
Well, I'm retired now, but I had my own private equity firm in Wall Street, an office in Greenwich, and another in the Cayman Islands.
You married?
Oh, yes, my wife, Priscilla, is very active in the Junior League.
Children?
Two. Chip. Just finished at Princeton, and Buffy's in her third year at Miss Porter's.
I see. Very impressive. And your religion?
Oh, we're goyim.
Bessie and Morty have just finished making love, such as they can in their golden years. Bessie heads off to the bathroom to freshen up. Morty stays in bed until he hears a scream come from the bathroom. He toddles over to see what's up and sees his wife sitting naked on the toilet. He says, Bessie, what's the matter? She says, what's the matter is I'm stuck. He says, what? She says, I'm stuck. I got a suction. I can't get up. He says, this is a joke. Behind me, the plumber. He starts to head up. She says, I beg your pardon. You got a naked wife with the suction sitting on the toilet, and you're bringing in the plumber? He says, oh, I beg your pardon. He says, looks around.
finds a towel, hands it to his wife. She uses it to cover her ample bosom. He starts to head up again. She says, "Excuse me, I got another exposure. Should cause you some concern." I am so sorry. Looks for another towel. Can't find one. So he takes off his yarmulke, hands it to his wife, and she puts it where it needs to be. So he goes up against Jaime the plumber, who's about 110 with the long beard. He comes in, looks the situation from one side, strokes his beard, says, uh-huh. Looks the situation from the other side, strokes his beard, says, uh-huh. Looks the situation head down, says, "I got good news, I got bad news. The good news is the woman they can save. The bad news is the rabbi is gone."
Fanny and Sol, an elderly couple, are riding in a car down Collins Avenue in Miami Beach. Sol, do you realize you almost hit three cars in the last 5 minutes? What? I'm driving?
A woman meets a man in a bar. They talk, they connect, they end up leaving together. They get back to his place, and as he's showing her around his apartment, she notices that one wall in his bedroom is completely filled with soft, sweet, cuddly teddy bears. Three shelves in the bedroom are filled with dozens and dozens of these darling teddy bears, all carefully placed in rows, covering the entire wall. Well, he's clearly taken quite some time to lovingly arrange them, and she's immediately touched by the amount of thought he's put into organizing the display. Small bears all along the bottom shelf, medium-sized bears covering the length of the middle shelf, and huge, enormous teddy bears running across the top shelf. Well, she is very impressed that he has such a sensitive side. They share a bottle of wine, they continue talking, and after a while she starts to think, "Oh my God, maybe this guy could be the one. Maybe he could be the father of my children." She turns to him and kisses him softly on the lips. He responds warmly. They continue to kiss. The temperature builds. And he romantically lifts her in his arms and carries her into his bedroom, where they rip off each other's clothes and make hot, steamy love. She is so overwhelmed that she responds with more ardor, more creativity, more heat than she has ever known. After an intense, explosive night of raw passion, they're lying there together in the afterglow. She turns to him, gently strokes his chest, and asks coyly, "Well, how was it?" The guy smiles sweetly at her, strokes her cheek, looks deeply into her eyes, and says, "Help yourself to any prize from the middle shelf."
So a guy is driving down a country road, and he sees a sign that says "Talking Dog for Sale." Well, he can't help it. He's got to stop and check that out, right? I mean, his curiosity gets the better of him. So he stops the car, and there's this old man sitting on the front porch of the store. And the guy goes up to the old man and says, "Excuse me, but I'd like to see this talking dog." And the old man just shrugs his shoulders and says, "Suit yourself. Go around back. He'll be there." So the guy goes around to the back of the store, and sure enough, dozing under a tree is this mangy old mutt. The guy goes up to the dog and says, "Excuse me, but are you the talking dog?" The dog just raises his head and says, "Yes, I am." "That's amazing," the guy says. "Where did you learn how to do that?" And the dog says, "Well, there's not much to tell, really. I mean, when I was a little puppy, my littermates, they'd bark and they'd howl and I would talk. I mean, it just came naturally to me." "That's amazing," the guy says. "Did you ever do anything to capitalize on this incredible talent?" "Oh, yeah, well, sort of. I mean, when I reached adulthood, I was recruited by the CIA. They sent me behind the Iron Curtain. I went to Prague, I went to Warsaw, I spent a little time in Moscow. See, people would talk freely in front of me because, you know, I'm a dog. And then I would report back to my case officer. Yeah, we broke up a lot of international spy rings that way." "That's sensational," the guy says. "What about after the CIA? "Oh, well, after the CIA, I got sick and tired of being away from home so much, you know, so I came back. I met a gorgeous poodle. We got married, had a beautiful litter. My wife died kind of tragically, actually. She was chasing a car. I like to talk about it. The kids all grew up and went their own separate ways. I taught composition and English literature at the local community college for a while, but I'm retired now." The guy can't take it any longer. He says, "Stay right there. I'll be right back." He races around to the front of the store, goes up to the old man and says, "Okay, how much do you want for the dog?" And the old man just shrugs his shoulders again and says, $10. $10 for that amazing, incredible And the old man says, that dog is a goddamn liar. He never did any of that shit.
A very religious Hasidic Jew walks into a bar with a parrot on his shoulder. The bartender says, where'd you get him? The parrot says, Brooklyn, they got thousands of them.
It's a snowy December, and the mailman rings the Goldbergs' doorbell. He's lugging heavy gifts, several pounds of Hammacher Schlemmer catalogs, and a huge sack of holiday cards. Mrs. Goldberg opens the door and invites him in. She asks if he'd like a drink, a nice hot toddy. And afterwards, she asks him if he'd like to see her bedroom. He agrees. So they go upstairs, she pushes him down on the bed, and they have sex. 20 minutes later, she opens her purse and hands him a dollar. Mrs. Goldberg, he said, first a drink, then sex, and now a dollar. I don't understand. Well, she said, my husband and I were talking about Christmas tips. And I said, what about the mailman? And he said, screw the mailman, give him a dollar. The drink was my idea.
Has been driving a bus for 40 years. He's seen it all. Nothing throws him. So it's no big deal when one day a woman gets on the bus and goes to him like this. Dwoskin goes like this. The woman goes like this. Dwoskin goes like this. The woman goes like this. Dwoskin goes like this. The woman goes like this. And she gets off the bus. And the guy in the back of the bus says, what's up? And he says, nothing's up. The woman is deaf. She says, do you go downtown? He says, no, I go uptown. She said, you make stops along the way? He says, no, I go straight through. She says, you stop by the dairy? He says, no, I go by the ballpark. She says, I got my ass on the wrong bus.
The Goyish, a song no Jew should actually sing.
There's an old man called the Mississippi. That's the old man I long to be. What does he care if the world got tough? What does he care if the land ain't free? Old man River. That old man River. He don't do nothing. He don't say nothing. He just keep rolling. We keep on rolling along. He don't plant taters. He don't plant cotton. Them that plants them is soon forgotten. But all men do. He keep rolling along. You, me, we sweat, we strain. Bodies all aching, racked with pain. Told that barge, dip that bail. You get a little drunk, you land in jail. I feel weary and sick of trying. I'm tired of living and scared of dying. But old man River, you keep rolling along.
Driving through North Carolina on their way to Miami, and a cop pulls them over.
Excuse me, ma'am. Did you know you were speeding?
What? What did he say?
He said, did you know you were speeding?
License and registration, please.
What? What did he say?
He said he needs to see your license and registration.
See, y'all are from New Jersey. I once dated a woman from New Jersey. Worst sex of my life.
What? What did he say?
He said he knows you.
I was with my girlfriend Sadie and the doorbell rings. It was a delivery boy with 24 long-stemmed roses from her husband.
Oh, God, I hate it when he sends me flowers. Means I have to spend the whole weekend flat on my back with my legs in the air.
What? You don't have a base?
Stranded on a desert island for 12 years, and then one day he sees a raft floating off in the distance with someone waving desperately for help. So he dives in, he swims out, pulls the raft to shore. When he stops to see who he saved, he is stunned. It's Scarlett Johansson.
I know.
And then Feldman has not seen a woman in 12 years, and she is so grateful that he saved her life, she insists that they make love all night long. And for weeks on end, they make love, and they eat fish, and they drink coconut milk. But no matter how often they make love, Scarlett can just sense that there's just something missing. There's some urge of Feldman's that's just not being fulfilled. So one moonlit night, Scarlett turns to Feldman and says, "You've saved my life. I just want to make you happy. Isn't there anything I can do that would make you feel better?" And Feldman says, "Yes. You know what made me feel better? In that suitcase on the beach is a man's shirt and a man's suit. I'd like you to put that on." Now, this strikes her as curious, but she agrees, and so within minutes, she's dressed as a man. Now, he says, "You see that hill over there? Oh, it made me feel so much better if you would just walk around to the back of that hill and come up to the top and wave down to me." Well, now, this strikes her as even odder, but very dutifully, she agrees, and so she walks around to the back of the hill, and within minutes, she's up at the top, and she waves down to Feldman, and Feldman waves back and says, "Hey, buddy, guess who I'm stooping?"
St. Shlomo's. My husband, David Burke, had some tests the other day, and I'm calling to get the results.
We have two David Burkes as patients. They both had tests. They just got the lab results. One of them has syphilis, and one of them has Alzheimer's.
Oh, my God. How will I know which one my David has?
Well, why don't you send him to the store to buy bread? If he finds his way home, don't fuck him.
Tell me the truth. Will I live until I'm 80?
Well, Mr. Alderman, do you smoke or drink?
Never.
Do you spend a lot of time in the sun, do drugs, stay up late, or have lots of sex?
No, never. None of those things. So, will I make it to 80?
I don't know, but why would you want to?
I'm not a well man, and I'm getting worse. If I had any sense, I'd be in bed with a certified nurse.
Doctor, doctor, I can't pee.
You can't pee?
I can't pee.
How old are you, Mr. Shapiro?
I'm 91.
You've peed enough.
My aches have got aches. My pains are in pain. And what fizzles and sizzles inside there, all the smartest professors couldn't explain.
A guy goes to see his doctor, and the doctor says, "I'm afraid you're going to have to stop masturbating." And the guy says, "Stop masturbating? Why?" And the doctor says, "So I can examine you."
I probably will get worse every year. All the medical doctors take one look. They're amazed I'm still here.
Doctor, doctor, did you get the results?
We did, and I'm afraid I have some bad news. I also have some very bad news.
Oh.
The bad news is you only have 24 hours to live.
Oh, my God. That's only the bad news. What could be worse than that?
I couldn't get a hold of you yesterday.
What I have been through, no man would recite it. It would make a heartbreaking play or story that only Turgenev maybe could write. A tragical plot. How can I plan? Time I haven't got. You're dealing with no. With not a well man.
Doctor, doctor, what's the matter with my Ziggy?
I'm afraid Mr. Alderman has a very rare disease. It's almost invariably fatal. There's only one thing that can help him.
What is it? I'll do anything.
The only thing.
thing that will cure your husband is oral sex.
What?
Oral sex. You know what that means?
Well, yeah, sure. Oral sex, I know.
So what did the doctor say?
He said you're gonna die!
I'm not a well.
My parents, they came to visit me from Detroit in 1969. I'd been living in New York for about 6 months. Now, my dad was pure Litvak. He was born here in 1912, but in a very closed, unassimilated, Yiddish-speaking community. He didn't speak English until he started school when he was six, and spoke Yiddish with his parents until they died when he was in his 40s. So, on their first trip to New York, I took my folks down the Lower East Side. Now, this was a time of Ratner's, and Yonah Schimmel's Knishes and Gus's Pickles and Shapiro's Winery, who had the greatest slogan ever, wine so thick you can cut it with a knife. So we get out of the subway at Delancey Street, and there's a sign in Yiddish on the side of a building, and I asked my dad what it meant. Well, he just scowled and said, "Who cares?" and walked away. Well, I was stunned. My mom, she took me by the arm, she says, "He wants to be American, and he doesn't see any romance in the language of his youth." Well, she could see the look of confusion and dismay on my face. And then she said, "Jokes." I said, "What?" She said, "You want the past? Get him going on the jokes, those he can't let go of." Then she smiled and said, "What do you think we do all day, dance the twist? He tells me the old jokes and I laugh. He thinks he's doing it for me, but I know he's doing it to hold on to a little bit of himself." Now, of course, the Yiddish of even 40 years ago has largely disappeared from our society, except through wisecracks and insults and jokes. It's these jokes that have made my connection to the past a lot easier. I tell them to my Gentile wife, and she laughs, and I pretend I'm doing it for her, but I know different. I'm doing it for myself. For my dad. You know, now that I'm an old Jew myself, it's these jokes that make me feel as if I've come home. Of course, the last time I came home, I found my business partner in bed with my wife. I said, "Jake, I have to, but you..."
Turns to her husband, "Irving, go to the store and buy me a chicken for the Sabbath and make sure it's kosher." He goes to the store and there's no kosher chicken, so he goes around the corner and he buys a live chicken. And on the way home, he decides he'd like to see a movie, so he goes up to buy a ticket, and the lady says, "I'm sorry, sir, no pets allowed." So he goes around into the alley and he stuffs the chicken in his pants. Comes back, he buys a ticket, he goes in, he sits down, but the chicken can't breathe. So he unzips his fly. And there they are, Irving and the chicken, watching the way we were. Two little old ladies are sitting next to them, and one says to the other, "Becky, Becky, give a look." "What's to look? You've seen one, you've seen them all." "Yeah, but this one's eating my popcorn."
Murray Ginsberg is 74 years old, and he marries a much, much younger woman, and soon they're having problems. The young woman is just not being satisfied. So they decide to go see their rabbi. They explain their situation. The rabbi listens thoughtfully, and he says, "Well, let's try something they tell us in the Talmud. Go and find a nice, handsome young man, bring him into the bedroom with you while you're making love, and have him wave a towel while you're performing." So Ginsberg and his wife, they find a handsome young man, they bring him into the bedroom, Ginsberg starts stooping his wife, the handsome young man starts waving a towel. Now they try this a couple of times, but still nothing works. The young wife is still not being satisfied. So they go back to their rabbi, they tell him the situation again. The rabbi says, "Okay, Jewish tradition tells us that we do anything to satisfy our wives.
go back and try again, only this time, reverse roles. Murray, you wave the towel and the handsome young man, he'll get into bed with your wife. Let's see what that does. So they go back home. Ginsburg picks up the towel, the handsome young man gets into bed with the wife, and they start having wild, passionate sex. The wife starts screaming. She's going absolutely crazy. She has an incredible 7-minute orgasm, and when it's over, Ginsburg grabs the young man by the arm. He says, "You putz, that's how you wave a towel." Miami, don't tell me you retired.
I retired.
You, the most hard-driving businessman in all of Skokie, you retired.
I retired and I'm fine. You know why? I got a hobby.
You got a hobby?
I keep bees.
You keep bees? That's a terrible hobby. They'll attack you. You'll puff up like a blister. They'll take you to the hospital. You could die from there.
These bees wouldn't sting me. They're in a hive, like a drawer. They make honey. They're happy. I'm happy. It's a hobby.
But just when you least expect it, they will attack you and bite you and sting you and kill you.
These bees I keep in a closet. I close the door, they go in a hive. It's a hobby.
But they will come out from underneath the door during the night and sneak up on you while you're sleeping and attack you and sting you and kill you.
This closet I got taped up with the duct tape. All four sides of the door, airtight, like a drum. It's tight. Nothing can get in, nothing can get out.
That's terrible. The bees will all suffocate and die in there.
Oh, fuck them. It's only a hobby.
Nathan!
Morty!
What are you doing on the beach in Miami? Don't tell me you retired.
I retired.
You, the most hard-driving businessman in all of Skokie, you retired.
I retired and I'm fine. You know why? One day there comes along this huge fire. It burns the factory down to the ground. I get a very handsome insurance settlement. So here I am, retired. And you?
Well, I have a very similar story to tell. One day a huge hurricane blew up, tore down my entire factory. I received a nice insurance settlement, so me too. Here I am, retired.
A hurricane? How do you start a hurricane?
A young woman and her much older husband are out for dinner at a restaurant. The waiter asks, "And what will you have for your main course, madam?"
"I'll have the roast chicken."
"And for your vegetable?"
"He'll have the same."
It's horrible. I hate it. I can't stand it.
Milton, what's wrong?
I'm 85 years old. Every morning I wake up at 7 o'clock. I go to pee. I stand at the toilet. I push. I squeeze. If I'm lucky, maybe just a little tiny dribble is terrible.
I know what you mean.
Why, what's your problem, Irving?
But at 91, I wake up every morning, 8 o'clock. I try to move my mouth. I squeeze. I push. I grunt, I groan. If I'm lucky, maybe a razor. It's a nightmare.
I know what you mean. I'm 93 years old. It's just awful.
Why, what's your problem, Saul?
Every morning, 7 o'clock, I pee like a golden fountain. 8 o'clock on the dot, I move mine bowels. Nice, ripe, juicy plums.
So what's wrong with that?
I don't get out of bed till 9!
So, I'm out with my girlfriend, and my phone rings. It's my dad, and it sounds important, so we gotta find a quieter spot. And he told me he had cancer. Now, for the first few minutes, I asked all of the usual questions. What did the doctor say? How's mom? How are you? I felt helpless, you know, like there's something that I should be doing, but I didn't know what. So then I hear myself say, "Hey, Dad, a guy goes to see his doctor, and he's got a carrot in each ear and a mushroom up each nostril, and the doctor just looks at him and says, Well, I don't think you're eating properly. And there's a pause, long enough for me to think, what the hell am I doing telling him jokes? And then I hear my dad say, okay, a guy goes to see his doctor, and the doctor says, I've got some bad news. I'm afraid you have cancer, and you have Alzheimer's. And the guy says, well, thank God I don't have cancer. And we keep going, and we rattle off every single stupid joke you can think of. And we're both howling with laughter. I don't think the two of us have ever laughed like that together. Anyway, we eventually quiet down, and we're both exhausted from laughing. And my dad says, thanks. And I say, for what, Dad? And he says, for being normal. So I head back to the table, and I am still laughing. And my girlfriend asks what that was all about, and I'm still laughing, and I say, oh, my dad told me he has cancer. And my girlfriend immediately bursts into tears and tells me how insensitive I'm being, and I can't stop laughing. So then, midway through the meal, she turns to me and says, you know, there are just certain moments in life that are inappropriate for humor. So, a year later, my dad is on his deathbed, and I'm there with my mom and my brother and my new girlfriend. I put a pillow underneath my dad's head and just ask him if he's comfortable. And he looks up at me and shrugs his shoulders and says, I make a living. Sometimes it seems impossible to believe, but no inappropriate moments for humor.
An obituary. Would you examine it? It's a Xerox copy of the obituary. New York Post, is that correct?
That's
nothing
correct.
I made up. There are seven obituaries. Now, would you just read, without getting personal, mentioning the names, what does it say at the bottom of the first obituary?
He is survived by his
wife. Could you read the second obituary over here? What does it say there?
He is survived.
Survived by his wife. Could you read the third obituary? What does it say?
He leaves
his wife. See, they change it around so he won't get bored. And this one is, he is survived by his wife. What does this one over here say here?
He is survived.
Survived by his wife. And what does this one say here? Survived by, and what is, you know God damn well without, survived by his wife. Here, I want you to have that 7 out of 7.
Sadie, I have some bad news. I only have 10 hours to live.
Oh my God, Max, 10 hours to live? What can I do for you? I'll make your favorite meal, roast chicken, mashed potatoes, anything.
No, I couldn't eat a thing. After all these years, all I want to do is make love to you. We'll make love all night long.
That's easy for you to say. You don't have to get up in the morning.
It says here, this man fought in the Spanish-American War, the Boxer Rebellion, the Philippine campaign against the Moros. He was with Pershing when they gave Pancho Villa a new ass south of the ball. Yes, look at this. World War I, look at this. 4 times he was awarded the Silver Star. Is that correct?
Yes.
Not making this up.
No.
He received the Distinguished Service Medal and the French Croix de Guerre.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
What does it say at the bottom here?
Survived
by his wife. A man went up against arrows and bows, flamethrowers and bombs. He beat them all. The only one he couldn't beat was that old broad right there. Survived by his wife.
Sadie, for 55 years, our life together has been nothing but nice. It's been wonderful, and now that I'm dying, I have one final request.
Anything, Max, darling, anything.
You know how much I love your date cake, and now I'm smelling some baking in the kitchen, and I was wondering, as my dying wish, if maybe you could get me one last piece.
Oh, darling, I'd love to, but that's for the shiver.
This is from the newspapers. Could you read what it says there? It says, wife ends all. Read it, please.
Mrs. Vera Sherman,
right.
Prague, Czechoslovakia,
right.
On hearing that her husband was leaving her for another woman,
right.
Threw herself from a third-story window to end it all.
Correct.
She was taken to a hospital and soon recovered.
Right. Schweinebürger! She threw herself out of the third-story window to end it all. She'll recover. Was it?
Her husband, on whom she landed.
Chicago Sun-Times Tribune.
Yes, my husband Max Saperstein died yesterday, and I'd like to take out a death notice.
What would you like it to say, ma'am?
Well, how much does it cost?
$10 a word.
$10 a word? Well, Saperstein dies.
I'm afraid there's a 5-word minimum, Mrs. Saperstein.
A 5-word minimum?
I'm afraid so.
Saperstein dies, Buick for sale.
Survived by his wife!
And that, my friends, concludes our little evening. We hope we made it worth your hard-earned bucks. And next time someone tells you life's depressing, wave your program in their face and tell those schmucks. Laugh a little, laugh.
Sing a little song.
The best time for a chuckle is when everything goes wrong.
Remember that you're dealing with life's problems and folks.
There's always old Tuesday. Jokes that make you laugh. Jokes that make you smile.
Careful, no one jokes with old Jules.